Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the Video Store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV?
How's it?
Hey.
Good morning.
How are you guys doing, man?
Absolutely fine.
On the cuckest day of the year.
Yeah, what's going on?
What the fuck?
We're not so supposed refreshing. To have clouds.
Yeah, no, it's one thing to have a winter in Joburg, but to have like a mizzy winter, that just doesn't happen. That's a Cape Town thing.
It's a Cape Town thing. That's why we live here. It's like one of the main reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Video Store. Thank you for wandering into this lovely video store. We have got lots of cool movies and series here on the shelves, and we hope that we can find you something to watch. Or at the very least, the next hour can be passed by listening to us talk shit. We've got ourselves a Cole Matthews here today. It's nice to have you back, Cole.
No, thank you. Happy to be here.
You are a creative copywriter.
I'm a creative at Superside, but... call me a video copywriter.
A video copywriter.
Yeah, I hate the title creative, but now I have it.
But you're a man of creative industry work.
Yes.
Gaddy, you are a member of Short Straw with me, but you are also a candy maker.
I sure am.
Gaddle's Candy Company is found at the lobby of the Bioscope and many, many shops around the country.
And online.
And online.
And in your hearts.
And my name is Russell. I am the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And we've got ourselves a lovely day behind the counter.
And lovely mizzy day.
A lovely mizzy day. It's warm and cozy in here. And warm and cozy in our hearts. Let's kick things off with a little round of, hey, did you guys see? But just before we do that, let's talk about our main things to chat about. The big movie of the week is Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
First Steps.
Yeah.
All of us went to a big fancy premiere last week at Eastgate, where they took over. It was quite a production.
It's amazing.
And it was very cool to be invited, so thank you, Disney. I've seen a nice movie on Disney Plus, which I want to talk about. What other things?
I'd love to talk about the new season of The Sandman.
Okay.
It released recently.
Cool. Gaddy, you been watching anything recently?
So we'll talk about it in the first, hey, did you guys see?
Okay, cool. All right, we'll get into it. All right, does anyone want to kick off?
Okay, well, let me go first.
Oh, shit.
Okay. Hey, did you guys see that Matt Stone and Trey Parker apologized at Comic-Con for their recent episode of South Park?
They apologized?
Yes.
Okay,
hold on.
That's a very poor phrasing of what happened.
Inverted commas. Okay.
Oh, so they didn't apologize.
Yeah. No, they... yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so
what happened?
There's a little bit of context to this.
Go to the beginning.
Okay, so basically it started where Trump sued CBS because he claimed that they... edited a 60-minute interview of Kamala Harris in the pre-election.
Okay.
So all interviews are edited and whatever.
Okay.
So he would have lost this anyway, but Paramount folded and basically gave him a payout. And part of the payout was that a certain amount of money would go to free advertising for Trump. So
on Paramount.
On Paramount, they're a parent company, so they've got a lot of channels that are underneath them. So okay. He'd get this free advertising. So in response, Stephen Colbert went on his show and basically said CBS parent company is Paramount. So he went on a show and basically accused his parent company of bribery.
Okay.
And then in response, CBS canceled Colbert's show.
Yeah. At the end of May next year, his show's done.
Mm. Yeah, so it's he signed contracts up until that point. They're just not renewing the contract.
Okay.
So they're just not continuing the show at all. This is the show that Letterman was on. So, I mean, this is like a standard show, one of the top-rated talk shows. It's like a big deal.
This is The Late Show.
The Late Show with Stephen Colbert.
Yeah. It's usually something where they just cycle out hosts even if the host gets fired.
But yeah, Letterman was for many years. Mm.
So while this is all happening in the background, there were issues with South Park they had contracts with multiple people with Comedy Central and someone else, but they just, a few days after this announcement of Stephen Colbert, they just inked a $1.5 billion deal for like 5 seasons, 50 episodes, which is huge. And
five more seasons of South Park. So
five more years, yeah. Now, what absolutely blows my mind about this whole situation was about 3-4 months ago, they released a trailer for the new upcoming season, which is unusual because South Park always makes the episodes like a week before. Like, this is something that they've done that's always very current. So the fact that they released a trailer was like quite exciting because it means that they've thought about what they're doing, and also a little strange. But it turns out that the trailer that they put out was a red herring to screw with Paramount to make them think that they're releasing something else. And what they did was put out an episode basically ripping Donald Trump to shreds for 20 minutes.
Yeah. He's a little character that wanders around.
The cool thing is they haven't done that in like 20 years. So that the only time they've ever done that before, times, were with Saddam Hussein, where they made him like animated like a Canadian in South Park, the cutouts of their face. And Mel Gibson, I think. Those are the only two times I can remember it.
Where they've actually like taken their face, as opposed to in the South Park sort of animation style.
Yeah, because exactly. In the past they've used Mr. Garrison as a placeholder for Trump. So like Garrison ran, and they didn't call him Trump, but he was basically Trump.
Yeah, it was an analogy, I guess.
But now like Garrison is back in South Park and is actually Trump. It's like they're not playing games anymore. Like it's not even like subtle.
No, it was hectic. The whole thing is that he's got a super small, tiny bit.
Tiny penis.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's interesting. So they did this one deal, but it seems like there's more pressure from Trump and the Trump administration on Paramount to play ball, to continue to play ball.
Yes.
Because the reason they did this bribe is they're trying to...
But I mean, is it a bribe? Why is it a bribe? How is it a bribe?
Because he would have lost if he went to court.
You would have absolutely have lost, of course. They didn't want to do the legal proceedings.
They're just trying to avoid issues because what the South Park episode does so brilliantly is it encapsulates how shit scared the press is of Trump.
Yeah.
They do a segment of 60 seconds where you can see like they're shaking. It's just like, oh, no, Trump, he's amazing. It's like someone said this, but it's like, that's what they said. That's what we think. And it's like everyone's just like, so nervous around him, and it's like they're perfectly daring Trump to sue Paramount again.
Yeah,
and they've literally just signed this contract, so Paramount can't fire them. Otherwise, they've got to pay them $1.5 billion. It is just like this Mexican standoff, like I've never seen before.
It's interesting.
It's nuts.
Yeah, and you got to have big kahunas, and you got to have a lot of money in the bank, which those guys do.
Exactly.
Where you're like, I don't care for more hundreds of millions. Like those two, the South Park founders, are multi millionaires. And what's interesting is that Matt Stone is actually more wealthier than Trey Parker.
Even though Trey does basically 90% of the writing.
And I think it's because it's a testament to over time how much better one person's investments can be over the other. I think they pay themselves the same, but I think the one has managed their money,
money better.
Like significantly better than the other.
Yeah, the Jewish guy managed money better.
No, I thought that was very interesting. But we are unquestionably in a very interesting time where Trump is laying certain framework and foundations that are very scary.
Absolutely.
And how certain stuff is being obliterated, and you're seeing left, right, and center all these executive orders, and you're seeing all this intimidation, and you're seeing so many things that are going to take America many, many years, decades to recover from.
Absolutely. And talking about executive orders, he just deregulated. This is a good, hey, did you guys see? But it's related to the previous one. So, hey, did you guys see that Trump deregulated artificial intelligence? So, you're not allowed to, as part of his executive order, regulate the artificial intelligence industry. So, what does that look like? That looks like copyright for artists. It looks like environmental regulations when you look at how much energy the data centers consume, et cetera, et cetera. And also the content of it. So celebrities, who can you depict inside of artificial intelligence? And the day after he did that. South Park released their episode where they created an AI-generated Trump naked walking through a desert, and his little pee-pee says, "I'm Donald Trump." So it's like...
I endorse this message.
Yeah, exactly.
But the scary part is, like, we don't entirely know what exactly that means, and we get this headline of he's deregulated AI. But I mean, the intricacies of that.
Oh, yeah.
And what exactly that is probably something so small or different, or you know, it's
like legal.
It's a certain kind of deregulation of a certain kind of part of AI. It's not a huge blanket thing, but. We as the citizens get given these headlines that just disrupt our lives, where you're like,
yes.
What? What is that? Oh,
well,
fuck.
That's their goal.
What is going on? Yeah.
Just to sign so many...
and then you forget all the other things that happened before.
No, and of course, this has been the tactic with Trump the whole time, is to just give you a tornado of stuff where you can't pinpoint one thing. It's not just like there was that one woman in the office, Monica Lewinsky.
Yes.
And
it's not like
this one scandal happened. Yeah. It's just like that was last week. This week is something else. And that's clearly the tactic.
And Absolutely. It's all distractions for, I saw something yesterday. It's amazing. It's like if we keep on bugging him about the Epstein files, they're eventually just going to release all the aliens from Area 51.
But in this whole realm of things, I saw, this is now a little bit old, so it was on the 12th of July, so it was earlier this month. Hey, did you guys see, earlier this month, YouTube will no longer monetize videos that don't have real people's voices.
It's also like any, like as part of their partner creator program, I can't remember exactly what it's called. So that's where they monetize content. They share in profits with content creators.
Yeah, right? It's a huge part of their business. Yeah.
So if you're one of those partners, you can't use AI-generated content. Like visuals,
music. You can still make them, but they won't give you money for them, which I think is good.
Yes. Absolutely. That is a brilliant move.
Yeah.
Because you look at how many grifters there are online. I saw that the new Avatar poster dropped. For Avatar 3, Fire and Ash.
Yeah, yeah.
And then on YouTube, I was like, oh, I think that means that the new San Diego Comic-Con that's happening this weekend, they must have dropped a trailer. So I go online to YouTube, and there are 15 Avatar, Fire and Ash trailers. And the thumbnails all look real. So like, I click on them, and then all of them are AI-generated trailers.
It's probably like footage from the old movies.
No, but it's like now AI-generated imagery for like what the third movie could look like.
But is it also like that no shots longer than 4 seconds? Do they still have those regulations with AR video?
No ways. We're way past that. They want to make full on movies now.
Well, let's move on to movie stuff.
Yeah, let's move on to movie stuff. Hey, did you guys see? I got two of these today, but I'll do one for now. That Jonathan Rocksmith, an old guest at the video store, has got a new show on at the Teatro at Monte Cassino.
Okay, My favorite Broadway. Did you go watch it?
I went to go watch it last week, Friday, at the gala event.
Oh,
the gala opening.
Shot for the invite.
It's Jonathan, not me.
No.
I got a complimentary.
No, but you've performed with him on stage.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, let me tell you, I think he still owns the title of being the most viewed, the most listened to episode of the video store.
Oh, no ways.
For the longest time he was, and we've just released so many since, I don't think any have topped that.
Wild.
Which is a testament to just how much of a star he is.
Exactly.
And
I mean,
he's just so incredibly talented.
It tracks. The whole like premise of My Favorite Broadway is that John has been overseas doing other shows for a while. Especially Phantom of the Opera in like China and a whole bunch of regions in Southeast Asia and stuff.
Yeah. For those who don't know, Jonathan Rocksmith is South Africa's star theater performer. He's a handsome man who's incredibly talented and has famously performed Phantom of the Opera like 1,000 times.
When he spoke
he said something like 700 times.
It was like 17 shows or something. I can't remember what it
17
was
17 runs
that.
I mean, you do it 8 times a week.
The show that he performs
but he's incredible. And Key Change, where you performed, was at the smaller Peter Turin at Monty, and it's just so cool that he's now in the Teatro.
Exactly, back in the Teatro again,
which is the big one.
Yeah, and during the show he'll talk about the like shows that he started doing at the Teatro and what an important place it was for him, because that was the place that launched kind of his career, and everyone in South Africa associates him as, you know, our Phantom of the Opera, our theatre performer.
I just love it when I love it when someone is able to be themselves. Like someone is able to present themselves as Jonathan Rocksmith.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It's not just like, hey, it's the guy that does the thing. It's like, it's Jonathan Rocksmith.
Exactly.
And his name of the show is not just My Favorite Broadway, it's Jonathan Rocksmith's My Favorite
Broadway.
And it's just like, it's just so cool for him that he gets to like present himself as the
Exactly.
As the person.
And like, John is far more involved than people understand. I think like, we understand that he's involved as a producer and like designing the shows and stuff, but he's also a musical director and he does the arrangements in partnership with the people he's working with. But that is a big fucking deal. For Key Change, he won the Naledi Award for best like orchestration and being a musical director. So like, taking the music and saying, this is what that instrument plays. And now in My Favorite Broadway, there's a new orchestra that's been assembled. And it's called the Egoli Symphony Orchestra.
Was it created for his show?
For the show.
Oh, that's exactly cool.
So it's really cool because it's an old-timey show in the way that it's like a big bandstand situation with one crooner. So it's like a Bobby Darin, Frank Sinatra kind of situation where John is the guy on stage and he's singing all these Broadway classics in the style of like a big band. But then there's also other numbers thrown in. You can have the range of having orchestral pieces with slow or like quieter piano only pieces and then into like big band stuff. So it's an incredibly like varied show in terms of its sound, but it's still like, it's brilliance in terms of the wall of sound.
What is his main instrument that he plays?
He plays the piano Yeah,
which really is the sort of spine of music.
And there's a very, I don't want to spoil it for people, but the second act starts with a very, very famous piano piece. And it's quite a big deal.
Vanessa Colton's 500 Miles.
The best song ever written on piano. Fuck Elton John. But no, so this is...
It's your song.
No, it's not your song.
Damn.
No. Okay. A very famous piece that was written for the piano. It's over 100 years old.
It's got to be a Broadway.
Yeah, it's got to be a Broadway thing. And it's a big deal that he can play this piece. I mean, I've always known that Jonathan can play it, but I've never seen him play it. And it's
and
it's
he's not just he's not just playing it once.
No,
he's playing it a couple times a week.
Yeah, it's like 6 to 7 times a week.
That's amazing.
So that's only on, I think, for the rest of this week, and then John's off to Cape Town to go rehearse with Chicago.
Yes, because then he is he's playing Richard Gere.
Billy Flynn.
Lovely. Okay. Hey, did you guys see the trailer for Hopper, which is the big Pixar movie of the beginning of next year?
Yes, I did.
So there was a trailer.
The one that's not like Avatar.
Yeah, no, but that's what's so cool. I just love the fact that they are certainly getting behind it by giving it this kind of almost 5-6 month build up.
So yeah, I think the marketing needs to be better.
No, but this is just the start.
Yeah.
You know, it's in March. It releases in March next year. So it's still a long way to go, but they're starting to turn the oven on. You know what I mean? And
exactly.
it's got to bubble slowly. But what we get given, Gaddy, is a very cute little girl who's got like a bunny plushie, and she's in some kind of a science facility.
Yeah.
And these scientists have said, we've figured out a way for you to like sit in like some kind of chair, and through science, we can put you into the body of an animal. So she's like, like Avatar. And they're like, it's not like Avatar. Meanwhile, it's literally like Avatar.
It's literally like Avatar.
And I just love the fact that they get to like reference that.
Yes.
And so immediately our main character is this cute as fuck little bunny in the forest and can interact and talk with other animals, which just immediately is great and sweet and lovable. And we get given one cute little anecdote in the trailer. But it should be good. It should be lovely. And I just think it's nice to not get Despicable Me 7 and Kung Fu Panda 10. It's just nice to see a nice, good, well-made original story. Because when Elio came out and it didn't do very well, I remember hearing Disney, you don't know how true this is, but I heard that Disney was fighting back with a comment like, oh, you guys want original stuff. Here's Elio, but you guys didn't go and support it. Elio wasn't that good.
Yeah, I didn't see Elio.
No, but there's a reason, because nobody went to see it and was like, oh my God, it's just so good. It just wasn't that good. It was an average fucking story. But here, Hopper seems good. immediately just from this trailer, it just seems so great.
Yeah.
So here's to exciting original
content.
Are they
timing the release around Easter? Is that the idea?
Oh, that would be smart. Yeah.
March. Oh, well done.
Mm. Well done.
So we should put you in marketing at Disney.
Hey, did you...
I can do it.
All of us go. At the same time. Go.
Hey, did you guys see that director Park Chan-wook, famous for Old Boy, which we screened here at the Bioscope?
Yes.
Like, I don't know how many years ago, probably two, is releasing a new movie, which is incredibly exciting. Sorry, this is like for the cinephile nerds out there, I think, more than the general audience.
Yeah.
But a director of The Handmaiden and Old Boy, two incredible films that everyone should watch. It's called No Other Choice. The trailer dropped last week.
Okay.
And the cool thing is that it's starring Lee Byung-hun.
Okay, who's that?
Who everyone, I think, will recognize as the front man from Squid Game.
Ooh.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And who was far more involved in season two, which was really interesting. And also the lead actor of I Saw the Devil, which is like a gross fucking revenge horror. Have you guys seen that?
Mm-mm.
Oh, it's gory. Sure, and has. Yeah, parents seen it. Parents, my G. But okay, yeah.
This is cool. How old is he now?
Park Chan-wook.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a fantastic question.
But I mean, he's still in his prime.
He's born in 63. So he's like in his early 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's still...
still kicking.
Still kicking hard.
Yeah.
That whole Sympathy trilogy was great.
It was amazing. Did you guys watch Decision to Leave?
No.
I never finished it. Actually, I never
it is so
that.
Good. It's very much like a voyeuristic Rear Window kind of energy with a detective that falls in love with someone he shouldn't be falling in love with kind of angle. And it's a fucking stunning story. And of course, like these, I think, new wave Korean guys... talk about the cinematic movement. I see I sound like such a fucking douche.
No, this is interesting. No, because he's not just a random director.
No.
There was this Korean new wave, which hit when? Like,
there was like the late 90s, early noughties.
And it was him?
It was him.
Park Chan-wook? Bong Joon-ho?
Bong Joon-ho, yes, and another guy.
And
another guy. There were quite a few of them. But basically, when Korea, I think it was like the early 90s, went through a massive economic kind of recession or depression, as part of the new budget, they put like 5%, like a way ton more money than they had before into arts and developing the arts. And we can see the impacts of that now, 20 years later, in cinema and in pop music. In like television series, the arts industry in Korea has like infiltrated the global market.
The Korean stuff on Netflix, like,
but
that's far surpasses.
I mean, there's that entire deal that they signed. I don't know if you guys know of this. I can't remember what studio it was. We can fact check this for later. Is that they signed a deal? They've got like, we've got 20,000 movies in our IP little catalog, and what's going to happen is Koreans are going to remake these English movies. And the English people are going to remake all the Korean movies. So it's this deal between two production companies where they share all their IPs and say, cool, we're just going to cross-pollinate and make adaptations of each other's films.
Oh, that's cool. Mm.
Yeah.
But okay. I
so like we can have an English Parasite. Oh, and now we're getting David Fincher's Squid Game, right? It's like, yeah.
I remember, I think it was in our episode with Nina Hasty where we spoke quite a lot about Korean stuff. Like, you as a Korean kid could kind of almost enter like a formal academy to be like a singer and a stuff. It's like, I know we've got that here. We've got like an AFTA and we've got performing arts colleges, but there was something a little more structurally different about it. I think it started a lot earlier.
Sure.
So it's almost like an NSA, but like on a huge level.
Right.
Like we've got one NSA, which is like a normal high school, but that has a leaning towards the arts.
Yes.
This was like academies, like huge setup academies.
I can imagine, especially for the K-pop bands, because they want to launch those as soon as those kids like turn 18 or something, right? Yeah. So they want the youngins.
As soon as they do their time in the army.
Yeah, dude. For real. Mm. Like their little 6-month stints, I think it is. Wow. As part of their compulsory service. Yeah.
Oh, shit. Did you guys see, I don't know whether this is true, but it looks real, is Tim Burton remaking Attack of the 50-Foot Woman?
Yes.
I also saw that, yes.
It's Barbie, Margot.
And it looks like Margot Robbie will be the 50-Foot Woman.
Oh, wild.
Which is cool. Have you guys ever seen the original?
I've never seen the original.
We've got the poster in the lobby, but I'd love to watch the original.
I don't think anyone's actually seen it. Does the movie actually exist?
Yeah,
it's just a poster.
No, it's a real thing.
Yeah, is it a real movie, actually?
I think we should try and like do track down the original and certainly screen the original.
Perrin probably has it on Blu-ray. He's probably got it
in a 4K remaster.
Criterion.
Criterion.
But I think that's cool. And I just think that could be, when that comes out, like that could be like a big movie. Like,
I think it could be a big
movie. Literally
and
figuratively. But like it just looks like it could be a big deal.
Yeah, interesting. I don't know what to expect with like not knowing what the film's about and Tim Burton being as weird as he is.
Yeah.
You know, it could be something really special.
Cool. I got one last thing, which is, hey, did you see that Short Straw?
Hey!
Which is the band that myself and Gaddy are in.
Are you guys in a band?
We're in a band. Our like sort of main big album, Good Morning Sunshine, is being released on vinyl.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So this was our sort of, what was the band? It was the band's second album, but it was when myself and Gad joined.
It was our first album with
Short Straw. And this is the one that's got Couch Potato and Bikini Weather and
yeah, the classics.
Mo Money and Wedding Blues. Like, it was really like, I think, where we kind of turned,
clicked
and sort of became the Short Straw that I think people kind of know us for. And we're teaming up with Mr. Vinyl. He's got a very cool label called the South African Music Press, where we're going to release this on a very cool vinyl. And so pre-orders are open, which is cool. And they come in, which is great.
Nice.
So I just love the fact that we're getting to it, which is cool.
That's awesome.
It's
11.5 year anniversary.
Yeah. It's a little overdue. But
what
it's
a milestone that everyone celebrates.
Yeah. But yeah, very cool that it's out there and that people are buying it and pre-ordering it. We're only making 300, so it's not a lot.
I'm going to grab one of those.
You should. Do you have vinyl player?
Yeah, I do.
Cool.
My boss sent me hers.
It's the gift that just gives for
it's
the rest
so
of
nice,
your life.
Dude. It is. It's a buzz expensive hobby, but it's so fucking cool holding a vinyl in your hands.
But that vinyl, and this is what I justify when I spend money on vinyls,
yes,
is that like, the value for the most part will remain.
Yes.
Especially if you look after it.
Yes.
Like if you shit hits the fan and you got to sell stuff, like you can get most of the value of what you've spent back. Where like clothes doesn't work like that. Cars don't work like that.
No.
Like most of the things we spend our money on just disappears the moment we buy it.
Yes.
Where with vinyl, like you can justify, you know, hundreds of rands.
Mm.
So yeah, lacquer guys. Okay, should we get into?
Well, I've got a last. How did you guys see that ties into what we're going to talk about?
Sure.
So, hey, did you guys see that Fantastic Four made only a few million dollars more than Superman in its opening weekend?
Which
is very close, but sure. Fantastic Four beat it out.
That is incredibly interesting.
That is interesting because let's just set this up in roughly this. Pretty much the exact same month, a few weeks apart, our two biggest comic book studios, DC and Marvel, both released two big movies that in theory were their kind of original main characters.
Yes.
So when you look at the world of comic books, and of course, Gaddy, you're far more of an expert, so just chime in if I've got this wrong.
Yeah.
But in the world of comic books, there really are this kind of top of the call sheet characters, and then you go further and further down. It's a more fun, weird, obscure side characters, right?
Yes.
And when the comic books were now becoming adapted many years ago, it was interesting to see what the studios sort of blatantly thought were their kind of main first goes, right?
Yes.
So yeah, like the X-Men. Obvious ones were X-Men.
Spider-Man.
But Fantastic Four was up there for Marvel because it was one of their main tentpole sort of stories, right? And so it is interesting that then when Marvel were able to try and do it on their own and not under big studio banners, they had to probably look to smaller characters. And it's interesting that something like Iron Man was their first film because Iron Man wasn't an obvious choice for the bigger studios. Mm-hmm. So it was available for them to do. And Iron Man wasn't necessarily the biggest, right?
Yeah.
And so ironically, has since become one of the biggest characters, but in the comic books wasn't as big as the Spider-Man.
I think Iron Man was before Fantastic Four and Spider-Man created in terms of that, but it never had the cool factor.
So I was about to say, they weren't top of the call sheet. They weren't the obvious choices. And over in DC, you've got Superman, which is like the main bro. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, he's in theory far above the Aquamans and all the others. So it's cool that both of them in 2025 were kind of rebooting their sort of star characters that in the past had been a bit misstepped. And both of them have rebooted them in like quite literally fresh, bright, fun, goofy ways.
Yes.
And both of them, both movies, the parallels are very interesting. Like, both movies skipped the origin story and kind of told it in an interesting way.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
It's true.
So both were kind of doing the exact same thing for both studios at the same time.
Yes.
So it is cool to compare the two, and it is interesting to see that Fantastic Four just outdid Superman. The timing of this season is very interesting. F1 started. They somehow secured the first pennies, the first money.
And then the Jurassic World.
Jurassic World, Superman, Fantastic Four. Like, it went in that order. And you can almost imagine them playing like a poker game.
Yes.
As major studio heads to sort of figure out this order.
I see you and raise you.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you this weekend if you give me that weekend. And I'll give you third place this time if in 2026 you give me second place. Or whichever is also the... I don't know which one is the best or the first. Or,
I mean, this is pretty obvious, but there's still the top four films at the box office are the four films we just spoke about. So it's like
they know
what they're doing. They know what they're doing, dude. I'm just very eagerly waiting to see how much Superman grosses, because I saw an argument on Threads, which I need to stop investing so much time into. Like, Zack Snyder, bro, is like saying, there's a reason why Man of Steel is the highest grossing Superman movie ever made. And I think it made like $600 million at the box office. And I remember he said that in the first week of the new Superman's release. And it's like, chill. Like, calm down, dude. We're seeing where this is going. I think it's grossed about $500 million so far. Globally, okay. $502 million. So it's getting there, dude. It'll pass that.
It's interesting. So just in terms of like which movie I thought was better, because like you guys know I'm the hugest Superman fan.
Yeah.
And Fantastic Four, I'm indifferent. I thought Superman was a movie that made me think more, that kind of left me pondering, and it like stuck in my mind, where Fantastic Four was a lot simpler. And yeah. I think, like, in the moment, I enjoyed Fantastic Four more because it was a self-contained movie. There weren't, like, a million other stories happening in the background. It was quite focused.
Yeah.
Where Superman, like, there was a lot of stuff that had to be introduced, and they're setting up for a lot more, where Fantastic Four felt a bit more insular.
It was very contained. I felt the same. And I was very content and excited to feel that I was part of a very complete story.
Yes.
And quite soon on, I was like, oh, I'm really invested. They were very successful at setting up this time and place and story and characters in a neat bow.
Yes.
I enjoyed that. And there was a point sort of halfway through the movie where I was like, oh, I'm in. I'm fucking in.
You didn't
I'm
have
in.
To do homework for
I didn't
Fantastic
have to,
Four.
I didn't have to think about it.
Yeah, that's I suppose that's like a different thing for it.
It was a fully realized thing where with Superman, I think you said it quite well, Gaddy, and I hadn't articulated it until we left the Fantastic Four premiere, where you were like, Superman felt like it was the middle film of a trilogy. Where you were like, what came before? What comes after? It was a bit rushed, and it was a bit like, I don't know who Lex Luthor is. Yeah,
right.
This Lex Luthor, this about a boy guy. What's his name?
Nicholas Holt.
Nicholas Holt, handsome man.
Yeah, no, we're always like, but, just like, he's the about a boy guy.
But it was like, who's he exactly? And it all felt a little bit rushed.
I think that's Superman's only, like, one of its only fair criticisms that
somehow
we can give
it.
Narratively, it's very overstuffed. There's a lot going on there.
But to the point where, yeah, it was too much, and it wasn't figured out, where I think this is testament to writing and how successful someone was able to in Fantastic Four just within that beginning little newscast that told the story of what happened to the Fantastic Four and how they became that, you needed 2 minutes. And if you showed the right shots, if you said the right thing, you can come out of that little 5 minute newscast going, I get it.
I know who these people
are. I'm in. Yeah. You know,
it's so interesting. It's such a fine line because you'd think something like Superman, because it's like so convoluted and all that, is because of the studio getting involved, where that's actually James Gunn's vision. And then you find out afterwards Fantastic Four had been reworked and rewritten and all these things. And like that just seems so, like, so complete and not cut up. So
Fantastic Four for me felt very refined and perfect. Like right down to certain scenes where two people that really know each other had to interact in like a kitchen.
Yes.
Right? And the writing and the acting, because that's another big part of it, is can these actors pull off this writing? But it felt so comfortable and familiar.
Yes.
And
homely and warm.
Homely and warm. Maybe it's just me and this time in my life where myself and my wife have started this baby journey.
Baby journey.
It's the baby journey where this movie, Fantastic Four, and I don't think I'm giving any major spoilers away, is really about this family and how the lady, what's her name? Invisible Woman.
Invisible Woman.
Is pregnant.
Yeah.
And the stakes of what it means to have a baby.
Yes.
And be pregnant. And if anything were to harm that baby.
Yes.
So it was like a very small story about a family.
Like a nuclear family.
A nuclear family.
That you don't actually see a lot of anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, so,
just to tie this in a bow, it was about that as well as the whole fucking planet being absorbed.
Yes.
So exactly. It was like everything and
the small
this
little
tiny
hearts.
Story.
Mm. So what I was trying to say is like the complaint now about modern movies are that they're woke and they're trying to represent all these other minorities and whatever. And it's quite interesting that Disney just went with this nuclear white family to lead this movie.
I mean, like, it kind of makes sense because of its time period, right?
Yeah.
It's like if you set it in our 60s era, not some alternate timeline.
Yeah.
It's kind of just like that's what was in the popular media, right?
And the other thing to mention is that especially in the 60s, you had the monoculture. You had this one big broadcaster that could tell a whole nation what to do.
Yes.
You know, very famously, the Beatles were so successful in their propaganda as the Beatles that the whole world loved them.
Yes.
Granted, it's great music and they seem like lovely guys. But when you read an unauthorized biography, you realize like John Lennon had battery charges that woman raised against him that he settled out of court. He had illegitimate children, but the world never heard of that because of the monoculture.
Yes.
Because there was this one big radio newscaster that told you exactly what you needed to hear.
Exactly.
And that's also...
How many people watch that Ed Sullivan show where they were on that?
Yeah, exactly. Where now what people can't always articulate is that we are living in the complete opposite of that. Where you are living in your own little culture, your algorithmic culture.
Yes.
Where it is very hard to tell a whole nation what to do. The closest we ever came as South Africans recently was Ramaphosa's family meetings in COVID. But apart from that, we are not all hearing the same thing. We don't all tune in to Carte Blanche on a Sunday before the movie. So it is very hard to mobilize a whole fucking nation because we are deeply divided.
Yes.
And not just South Africa, especially the States. So it's like this movie was simple because it was such a simple time where it was like, hey, everyone, a big guy's coming to swallow our planet. So we all need to do this.
Yeah. When I watched that, I had to like just turn off the bit of my head that was going, that would not work today.
Yeah. No, people like, would fucking riot.
Exactly. No, it's like, oh, we're not now, we're back then. And things were different. It had to be like
we
a context
We all need to
shift.
Band together to conserve power.
I was just like, everyone would be like, Galactus is a conspiracy theory. It's misinformation. Galactus doesn't exist.
Yeah.
It would have been like the Don't Look Up asteroid. It would have been that.
But it's lovely because it became a very simple story where we all kind of rallied around it and we didn't have to focus on anything else. But I just think keeping that in mind and always thinking about that is so interesting.
Yes.
We've mentioned this on the video store. Literally over the course of our time together, and we're almost at 200 episodes, we've been slowly kind of discussing this at points where we were saying things like, Game of Thrones was the last big show that we all watched together because it was all on broadcast television. You know, we'll have those things with albums. We'll have those things with where they just will never reach the same.
Exactly, it's thing. Something else. It's
and to be honest, going to the movies is an artisanal practice now. It's not the mainstream. It is not the monoculture.
Exactly.
We don't all go out on a Friday night to watch the new whatever.
I mean, like, it's even like that with, like, fucking Gangnam Style or something.
Yeah.
There was, like, one YouTube video that everyone watched, and I think that's the last time that's going to happen. Still, videos get, like, a billion views and everything. But and it's kind of just like that time has come and gone.
And that was probably because certain algorithms allowed it to be open for everyone to see, where now, because there is so much, because there are so many people, those
so
algorithms
and niche.
Have got such unique algorithms going for them that they're not being served the same stuff.
No, not at all.
When you started a group on Facebook in the beginning, you got like a few thousand followers, like easy.
Absolutely.
Where now it's like, it's fucking, it's completely the other way around.
Yeah.
So interesting.
I think with Fantastic Four, I think the, and I'll represent Graham here because I think both of us agree that Superman was better. That's our, I don't know, it's, we shouldn't play the comparison game, but we all make lists. I'm just saying.
No. And, your opinion, but
I think even though it was overstuffed, I think Superman just had a super element to it. So I don't know what to say in terms of it being
it
inspiring. It was so emotionally centered and beautiful. I think that Fantastic Four.
Now, you see, that was lost on me.
Oh, really?
I came out of that going, out of Superman going, that's just another superhero movie.
Okay.
Maybe it was my mood on the day. Maybe it was just my reading. But I thought Fantastic Four had more heart.
Okay, interesting. I think my gripe with Fantastic Four is that the third act, I think the first and second acts are gorgeous. I think it has more of that like 60s retro treatment that's unique to Marvel.
Yeah.
But then as soon as it gets into the, and I don't think
the
action-y ever
stuff.
Work.
Yeah.
I don't think like big giant man destroying a city works unless you have another big giant monster fighting the man, like in Godzilla and King Kong. I think it's like where as soon as you get little people trying to do something, it's kind of just like, oh. And then also, Mr. Fantastic is still useless in a fight. They didn't give us like a really good example of why his power is as good as the things or the human torch.
His brain was stretching, Cole.
Yeah, exactly. He just gets like stretched and then you're just like, damn, this guy sucks.
Did you see those very niche letterbox collections of movies?
No.
People make these.
Oh, like, I do love those. I know what you're talking
and
about.
And there's one called Movies Where Pedro Pascal's Legs Stretch. And it's got Fantastic Four and Materialists.
Oh, hilarious.
Which I think.
Yeah, we won't spoil that for people that haven't seen it.
Yeah,
I think.
I just love that. I love that joke.
That is so funny. I love those.
Like, if you look at the difference between those two movies, it's like the Fantastic Four as characters in the movie were constantly like almost these celebrities, and it's the way that they were portrayed as like they were the only superheroes, and it almost felt like everything they were doing, the performances that they gave in the movie to the audience, were very curated and selected.
Crafted, yeah.
And so this impression that they gave to the people in that world and to the audience seemed very, I don't know, like held back.
Okay.
But where Superman, obviously he was being watched, but he was in this world of these other metahumans, and I felt like his humanness was able to come through more.
Well, he got more lambasted as a character. So like he got like properly cancelled.
Yes.
Where in Fantastic Four, when they are being cancelled, she goes out, gives this heartwarming speech, and the whole world's like,
problem solved.
We're cool.
Yeah,
don't
exactly.
Worry.
It's fine. We all believe you.
Oh, we totally get it. Yeah. It's like, you put that first so that we'll all die.
Absolutely.
But like Fantastic Four was just like this media juggling operation and all about impressions and how they are viewed.
Okay.
And I felt it created this curated kind of feel.
I think like they're kind of about the same thing, Superman and Fantastic Four then. If you look at like, it's about the world's idea of what these heroes are.
Yeah.
Fantastic Four kind of sets that up as not being an issue because the whole world loves them. They're like the Beatles of superheroes.
Yeah.
But then they suggest that there's going to be this fallout when they come back from seeing Galactus. They have some bad news for everyone.
Yeah.
And they suggest this fallout that they never really activate. But then as soon as the problem needs to be solved, like you say, Sue Storm just gets out there and does this little pithy, like lame, platitude-ridden speech. And then it's like, oh, it's fine. The problem's gone. But in Superman, they like get into the meat and bones because it's a modern issue of what it really means. And I suppose that maybe it's the thing that's in the 60s, that was an easier problem to solve. Like the politics and the propaganda of it were way easy to mend. But these days in the landscape that we have, if Superman has to like get out of that misinformation trap where everyone's kind of just like, you're a monster, you're here to colonize us. You know, and suddenly a whole bunch of parents have to explain to their child what a harem is. I think that, like, you know.
Yeah, and also just wonder how in Superman, he couldn't have just said, guys, so I grew up only ever hearing the first half of that message.
Yes.
So up until now, that's never been my intention.
Someone would have deepfaked him saying something else.
Yeah, sure. No, it's complicated. Yeah,
it's so tricky to dig yourself out of a hole these days.
Yeah. Is there anything more burning that you want to chat about?
Sandman.
No, in terms of Fantastic Four, can we move on?
Yeah, I think we can move on. I'm happy with this.
I'd love to mention something.
Yeah.
A little bit like when you were talking about careers, investment in the arts, and how you can really only see the repercussions of that 10, 20 years later.
Yeah.
I watched a movie on Disney Plus called Ocean, and this is old David Attenborough. It's a National Geographic film. It's just over an hour, so it's a nice, easy watch. But it is all about the ocean and how what we are doing is fucking it up.
Yeah.
That's the short part of it. But it's not all doom and gloom because they have these lovely parts of the world where they have declared them reserves. And they've seen the success of coral reefs being preserved and how quickly the fish can come back.
Right.
So the short of it is, I mean, go and watch it for the beautiful footage. I mean, this is like, this is the historical documents that the world will treasure for centuries. What they create in these films will be things that we as humans will honestly treasure.
Yes.
And go for his voice and just the charm and love of this. But it's really interesting because they make it very clear they're not anti-fishing. It's just certain fishing practices when it gets completely fucking raped.
Yeah.
As a seabed and completely, you know, these huge ships. They've got this incredible footage of, you know, these like little community fishing boats and then this fucking big trawler just like comes in the front of the frame with this, you know, boating soundtrack, and it just shows you that like we shouldn't be doing it on such a huge level or in this particular way. But it's not anti-fishing, but it toes an interesting line. I mean, someone should watch it finding it interesting how they balance and show the bad and the doom and then how they give you like some reprieve and then they go, but we're still fucked, but here's the reprieve. It's interesting to see the balance of it. But it's contained in this 1 hour, sort of 20 minute product, which just reminds you that we, for the most part, know very little about our ocean. We know more, you know, this is the famous fact. We know more about distant planets than we do our very own ocean.
Yeah. The deep dark.
But we're discovering more. And that's part of why you are being given this particular product now in 2025, because it's like, oh, we actually have learned this. Oh, we never actually knew this, but this actually happens. You know, the general theory was like, it's just a barren wasteland.
Yes.
Like, it's a desert. It's a desert of water in many ways, like the deep ocean.
Yes.
But we now know this. We now know that. But here we are doing this. Here's a chance for that. And we were in honeymoon in Maldives, myself and Les, last year, and they explained, like, the coral bleaching. If the temperatures of the water are raised by like 2 degrees, whole coral beds just get fucking bleached and they're fucked.
And they're gone forever.
And they're gone. And we'll lose the majority of our coral in like I forget. I'm going to butcher the fact. It's in the documentary. But it's like, it's a scary, very recent date, soon coming date where it's like, we could have it all disappear.
Yeah, no more coral reefs.
Which is scary.
It's terrifying.
But there are certain things where it's like, how quickly, if you preserve a certain part, how those fish will breed and then spread.
Yeah.
They're not just going to breed and live there. It's not like a reserve where you actually have to keep, like Kruger National exactly. Park, where you're like, oh, it's cool, let's bring back the elephants, but they can't move out of yes. Kruger National Park, where in the ocean they can move and they can actually help everyone, provided yes. you've got a solid base. It's interesting.
Do you guys know that there's somewhere on the East Coast, I think it's Maine.
Of the States.
Yeah, of the States, yeah. Where Trump signed an executive order that basically annihilates an entire sanctuary. Like an entire marine sanctuary for offshore fishing. It was like, it's been a marine sanctuary for like 50 years or something.
Yeah.
And it's kind of just like, cool, it's all going to be destroyed now. Like a whole bunch of, it's like where it's got like protected species and everything. Yeah. And Trump was just like, nope.
Well, the other part to also understand in our discussion about these executive orders, and of course it's like, it's not our monkey, it's not our circus.
Yeah, but we're fed this information every day.
Get affected. Is that the executive orders doesn't mean it's actually passed. It still has to go to those higher courts.
Right, yeah. So
But he ignores them, so...
Yeah.
It's out of the deal,
he just removes
guys.
Those judges, puts in ones that like him.
But this is the thing, is that even if it never actually passes, even if it never actually goes, the whole sort of community of Maine will just get fucking put upside down.
Exactly.
And everyone will just be like rattled and... You know,
it's dreadful.
Whatever.
It's dreadful.
Okay, let's lastly just touch on Sandman.
Oh, cool. So, have you guys seen the Sandman season one?
I've watched season one. I've read the comics.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I read them at EFTA. Like, they're one of the greatest things ever, like, put on paper.
Exactly.
And season one was perfect.
Really? Was it perfect?
It was like, so the first episode was literally the first comic frame by frame.
Oh. Interesting. Yeah,
and then it got a bit more creative as it went on, but that first episode was...
It was like stunning. Exact. So it's visually, it's an absolutely brilliant show. For people that don't know, the story of the Sandman basically fictionalizes these entities that control our like waking world and sleeping world, whatever. The Sandman is the person, what do they call him? Dream of the Endless.
It's just Dream.
Yeah, Dream. Yeah.
So they are the Endless.
Yes, which are like the entities that control life. There's Despair, there's Desire, there's Destiny,
death.
And all of these, like Death, they're all siblings.
Okay.
Metaphorical, but physically manifested on Earth.
Yes.
Okay.
As these creatures. So he has been away from his responsibilities because he was trapped. By this, like...
He got caught in a spell. Someone, like, basically summoned him and trapped him.
And who's he?
He's
this
Dream.
Is this,
he's
this is the Dream. This
dream.
Is the,
yeah, he's the
this
Sandman.
This is the entity that helps people sleep.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So it has power. So, like, it always, like, uses sand to make people fall asleep kind of thing.
And it's all based on our sort of childhood character.
Exactly.
The Sandman will come and help you sleep.
Exactly.
Then the idea is that while he's been captured, no one's been able to dream for this whole long period.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And then there are a whole bunch of people who had this, like, sleeping sickness. And one of those characters basically becomes an anomaly that he has to solve in the first season, where they're blurring this line between reality and the subconscious, where we dream. And that anomaly is going to basically bring about the destruction of the world that he has to solve. And that's the first season.
It sounds complicated. And I did dip my toe in with like the first episode and was like, cool, not for me. But I could see how it could be the sort of density that someone could really love.
Yes.
And like really sink their teeth.
It's like it's really good high fantasy in a space that isn't like wizards and elves.
Where is it available?
Netflix.
It's a Netflix series. And now the second season is the first one felt like it was more about the worlds between sleeping and mortals. Like and that relationship. But the second season feels like it's just about this world where it's about these entities, the Endless, and basically the politics of heaven and hell. And like where entities, Gwendoline Christie, I don't know if you remember her from Game of Thrones, she was the knight.
The tall one.
The tall lady.
of Tarth, something of Tarth.
Well done, Brienne of Tarth.
Brienne of Tarth.
Oh, look at us with our memories. You still got it, baby. Where she is Lucifer, and there are deals that are struck between Dream and her, I don't want to give too much away, that create like this politics of the world around humanity, basically everything else is being completely destabilized. And what's going to happen to us if the politics between heaven and hell and the endless are not resolved? It is really fucking good. But like also art direction, sound design, music, cinematography. It's just this incredibly unique, beautiful, fully realized world that is just...
And it's giving.
It's giving. It's, yeah.
It's giving the... It's giving everything
you need. It's giving high fantasy.
Did you finish the second part?
No, I haven't finished the part that's released because I know the last episode has to release at the end of this month still.
Oh, they still not put out the last episode?
No, so this, the last episode's still coming. I've watched 4 episodes.
Is it something that's being completely retold? Do you know, is there a story that is being worked through, or do you think they
there's different arcs in, I think there were 75 issues or whatever, and then it was collected into like 7 or 8 trade paperbacks. So each one has a couple of story arcs, so they're kind of going, jumping back and forth.
Okay.
But this is the final original season of the live action series.
There were supposed to be 5 or 6 seasons, but now because of this crap with the creator, they just...
Yeah, Neil Gaiman. They've like cancelled a whole bunch of shows they were developing.
Touch on that. So Neil Gaiman was the guy who wrote and created it.
Yes.
Right? He also did Good Omens. He's done a lot of stuff.
Yeah, a lot of work with Terry Pratchett.
Okay. And then what did he do?
He was accused of... assaulting babysitters and
like being a very weird sexual creep.
Yeah.
Okay. Just angry violence, like no, sexual very, violence.
Yeah. Like also manipulative, like fucking with people's consent, getting them to do things in the bedroom that they didn't want to do. And they were his nannies for his kids. And his wife was involved as well, who's also someone that was high profile.
Yeah. Amanda Palmer.
Amanda Palmer.
So they were just shitty individuals.
Yeah, they're just cuck people.
Yeah, you know what? It's hard because every now and again you might just hear one story and then you can, you know, it shits on your idea of that person.
Yes.
But when the moment it becomes more than one, that's where I think as a society we can kind of rule out like, okay, I think you're a shit person.
Yeah, you're a problem.
It's like one person, one moment... I'm not forgiving a person, but I'm just saying, okay, we can have an investigation. Let's see what happens.
Yes.
But like multiple. when it's more than one, it's like, okay.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think as a society, we can kind of rule.
Yeah.
Like maybe you get a little baseball. Maybe you get like one, maybe two.
Yes.
But like when it's multiple, whatever that means.
Exactly.
You're
but
a
you
cunt.
See, it's yeah, exactly. We know. Because like,
we don't need the trial.
I love the original series. I love season one. But like, part of me is like, what am I even going? Why should I bother watching like this next season? I know the story. I know they're not going to make more.
Right.
It's just it makes me sad because like I want to watch it, but like, even like I had the same with Good Omens season two. Like I just never watched it because yeah, I'd kind of left it and then I heard the news and I'm like, that's a weird feeling, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but then you follow your gut and you just don't watch it.
It makes me sad.
Yeah, it is annoying.
It is sad.
It's like when your hype for something becomes completely diminished because you know the people that made it are guck.
It's also, there's like 4 things that Jess watches with me and Sandman was one of them.
Oh, no.
But anyway.
Yeah, but this is where I also, I mean, I know it's not an easy line for some people to walk, but this is why I do believe in separating art from artists because...
Yeah, to some degree, but it's just if you feel it in your heart, Gaddy, then you just don't watch it, man.
Yeah, exactly. Just trust your gut.
Yeah, sure.
So much to watch.
There's so much else to watch. There are 6 seasons of Castle, which we are wading through.
Yeah, they're like 17 seasons of Grey's Anatomy. Just like dive in.
That is still... What did you shared it the other day, Gav?
Oh,
the most watched list. Shows of 2025.
So Bluey, then Grey's Anatomy.
Bluey makes perfect sense because kids just rewatch
every single morning.
Grey's Anatomy is fascinating.
Yeah, it is.
It is long since finished, right?
And this is streaming, by the way. So
are there no
knows.
New Grey's Anatomy? Aren't they still releasing episodes?
Yeah, they're still releasing
episodes. Okay, still sorry, running. I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But the fact that it is as old as it is, as legacy as it is,
yes,
and that it is still...
Up there.
So up there.
Exactly. You think that I saw it listen, I was so shocked because I thought that like something like White Lotus, but everyone watches and you're hearing everyone talk about it and you think, oh, this show is it's ubiquitous, but then it's only like 16th. It's actually not that high and all these other things that you've never heard of.
Grey's Anatomy was monoculture.
Yeah, it was.
It is left over from the monoculture. Absolutely. Where we all watched it at 7 o'clock on a Wednesday on Mnet.
Yes.
But I was
like,
most,
it's like The Bold and the Beautiful.
Most pleasantly surprised by Bob's Burgers.
Oh, yeah. That was like fifth.
Yeah, like number five.
This
it's
is
amazing.
The most streamed shows of 2025 so far. Yes.
Should we do a list? Counts it down from 10.
From 10. Okay. So number 10 is Law & Order SVU.
Wild.
There's just so many of those.
This is just such an out there list.
Yeah.
Okay. So number 9, Squid Game.
Cool.
So I think they would have done...
Because you got Korean eyes on that as well.
Right, exactly.
It's cool.
Okay, number 8 is The Rookie, which
I fucking love
about.
The Rookie. That's what I'm saying. I'm in the middle of this Nathan Fielder binge. We did all 6 seasons of The Rookie, and now we've gone back to Castle, which was the show he did before that, which is so cheesy.
Firefly's next.
Nathan's...
It's on Disney.
His name's not Nathan Fielder.
Not Nathan
Fillion.
Nathan Fillion.
Sorry, I got confused.
Nathan Field is the Nathan VU guy.
Okay, then number 7 is The Big Bang Theory.
Oh, God.
I saw the set.
Okay.
I went into the set on the Universal Studios tour in LA.
Okay.
But it meant nothing to me. It left me pretty cold because I never really watched The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, this is why we're friends.
Number 6, SpongeBob SquarePants.
Makes some sense.
Yeah. Makes some sense, yeah.
There's a movie coming out soon where the animation looks different. It looks really...
Yeah, it does. It's a trend towards like making 3D animation feel like it's real. Like,
yeah.
Material.
Got like a texture to it. It looks really interesting.
And then 5 is Bob's Burgers.
That is interesting.
There's a new season. I've got like 7 episodes to catch up.
I always thought that was quite artisanal.
Yeah, yeah, same. I thought it was like a niche thing.
Like I thought Simpsons would have done better than that, but... But the only thing that did better in terms of animation, well, adult animation, number 4, Family Guy.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Then 3, NCIS, just the, I'm like, but didn't we do that? No, SVU.
What's the number? The number is the amount of streams or the amount of money? Minutes watched.
Yeah.
NCIS is 19.11 billion minutes watched.
That's everyone's minutes added together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then 2, Grey's Anatomy, and 1, Bluey.
Yeah.
Bluey's been watched 25.09 billion minutes this year.
But Bluey, interestingly enough, out of all those TV shows that you've mentioned, Bluey is considerably less in terms of how much Bluey there actually is.
Oh, yeah. Bluey's like 15 minutes tops per episode or something.
But there's only like a handful of episodes.
No,
it's like
3 seasons.
Rewatching them over and over and over again.
I think there's even less.
Jeepers.
There's a
I completely understand.
There's like a Mr. Bean amount of episodes. It's small.
I've had to go to Cape Town for work on Key Change and I stayed with my mate Gareth. And then in the mornings we'd wake up and have breakfast cereal with his 4-year-old daughter and they'd put on Bluey and we'd sit and watch Bluey.
How many episodes?
154 episodes.
But they
probably like
so it's a lot bigger.
10, 15 minutes each.
In my head there was
52
less.
In season 1, 52 in season 2. Of these 3 have not been aired. 1 is 28 minutes. Otherwise I think they're like 15 minutes. So I mean there's a fair amount.
And then when I went to the UK last year for my cousin's baby who's like 8 months old, so she's a lot younger. Also, wake up in the morning, I knock on their door, I'm like, hi. And then we watch Bluey for like half an hour with their breakfast cereal. And it happens. It's classic, dude. Dad. And do you see that thing that happened in the musical community with the Bluey theme song? I think we might have spoken about this before.
Let's end on that. What was that?
So everyone in the musical community was trying to figure out and arguing about what the time signatures were.
Yeah.
For Bluey.
Yeah, and what
I actually can't remember what it was. It's been so long since I watched it, but I think it's a 7-8 bar after an 8-8 bar.
Yeah, it's a
weird one. Dad. Or something.
It's completely...
Yeah. It's like, and then it resets, but it's actually way more simple than what we give it credit for. I can't remember what it was.
Lovely.
Cool thing for you to Google if you're interested in that.
Yeah. Thank you. Magic, thank you guys. Thanks for a lovely day.
Yeah.
Oh, lekker.
Cool, man.
It's a cool shift.
Yeah, it was lovely.
Nice and warm inside from the mizzy weather outside.
Yeah. I hope everyone's keeping warm out there. Our home base is thevideostore.co.za. Thank you for all the lovies that you guys gave our last week guest episodes. That was a real treat.
Oh, lovely.
And if you're joining us, now for the first time, welcome. This is the typical episode.
Yes.
Which is us talking shit here behind the counter. And we'll see you guys again next week.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Lekker. All the best, hey?
All the best. All the best, eh?
Adios.
Have a lovely day, you.